Welcome back to our study of Genesis. We are in chapter 38, and I'm going to pick right up with verse 13. And it was told Tamar, saying, "Behold, thy father-in-law goes up to Timnath to shear a sheep." And she put her widow's garments off from her, and covered her with a veil, and wrapped herself, and sat in an open place, which is by the way to Timnath. For she saw that Shelah was grown, and she was not given unto him to wife.
So there's a couple things to look at. Number one, you see, what we talked about earlier, Judah left his brother. Well, now we know he's evidently doing all right. He has sheep because he's going, you know, to have his sheep sheared here at Timnath. And his daughter-in-law hears about it. Now, this has been a process of time. You know, we're talking years because she hears that the son's grown and Judah's not given the son to her. So she has this plan. And so when she hears her father-in-law's going to Timnath, she takes off her widow's garments and she puts the veil and all over her face so that he can't recognize her. And then she sets him up.
Mm-hmm. When Judah saw her, he thought her to be a harlot because she had covered her face. And he turned unto her by the way and said, "Go to, I pray thee, let me come in unto thee." For he knew not that she was his daughter-in-law. And she said, "What will you give me, that you may come in unto me?" And he said, "I will send you a kid from the flock." And he said, "Will you give me a pledge until you send it?" And he said, "What pledge shall I give you?" And she said, "Your signet and your bracelets and your staff that is in your hand." And he gave it to her and came in unto her, and she conceived by him.
So when Judah sees Tamar, he thinks it's a prostitute and he wants to have sex. So he asks her if she'll have sexual relations with him. He did not know it was his daughter-in-law. But anyway, she said, "What would you give me in return?" And he says, "Well, I'll send you a young goat from the flock." And so she said, "Well, what kind of security are you going to give me? I need something to guarantee that you're not going to hang me out to dry, you understand?" And so she asked, or he asked for the security, and she asked for the signet ring and for the cord and for his staff, for security as a guarantee that he would pay her in full. And so he gave these things to her. Then he had sexual relations with her, and she became pregnant.
Mm-hmm. And she rose and went away and laid by her veil from her and put on the garments of her widowhood.
So after having sexual relations with Judah, Tamar takes her widow's garments off, goes back to her father's house, takes off her other attire, puts on her widow's garments, and goes back to her father's house.
And Judah sent the kid by the hand of his friend, the Adullamite, to receive his pledge from the woman's hand, but he found her not. Then he asked the men of that place, saying, "Where is the harlot that was openly by the wayside?" And they said, "There was no harlot in this place." And he returned to Judah and said, "I cannot find her." And also the men of the place said that there was no harlot in this place. And Judah said, "Let her take it to her, lest we be shamed. Behold, I sent this kid, and you have not found her."
So Judah sends his friend, the Adullamite, with a young goat, which they had agreed to the woman, so he could get back his items that he had left with her security. And so when his friend goes down there, he can't find the woman. And so he asked the men of that place where the prostitute was, or the harlot who sat by the roadside. They said, "There's no harlot here." And so Judah's friend returns to him, and he said, I couldn't find her. And the men of the place said that there wasn't a harlot there. So Judah told his friend, said, just let her have the security items. Otherwise, we lose respect. He said, I sent the goat to her, but she was not there.
And it came to pass about 3 months after that it was told to Judah, saying, Tamar, your daughter-in-law, has played the harlot, and also, behold, she is with child by whoredom. And Judah said, bring her forth and let her be burnt.
It's pretty interesting. You know, 3 months later, someone tells Judah's daughter-in-law, Tamar, is pregnant. And so she was accused of being a harlot, and Judah said, go get her and burn her. Now, is that a double standard?
Yeah.
It's all right if he seeks out a harlot, but it's all right, not all right if somebody else is a harlot.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how many double standards are out there.
Mm-hmm. And when she was brought forth, she sent to her father-in-law, saying, by the man whose these are, am I with child? And she said, discern, I pray you, whose are these, the signet and bracelets and staff?
That girl was thinking ahead. This is a smart girl.
Yeah.
So before she ever agrees to have sex with him, she already has a plan. I'm going to have something to prove.
Mm-hmm.
That's why she asked for a signet ring to stop him. And so when he calls her out, intending to kill her,
mm-hmm.
they said, well, who's this stuff? That's how I'm pregnant, by the one who owns this. Well, that's egg in your face, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay.
And Judah acknowledged them and said, she has been more righteous than I, because that I gave her not to Shelah my son, and he knew her again no more.
So, Judah, I mean, he had to fuss up. But mine, mm-hmm. says she was more righteous than I was. She's wanting to raise up seed to her dead husband's name. And I told her I'd give her my son, and I didn't. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So, he does not have sex with her anymore. But he doesn't kill her either.
And it came to pass in the time of her travail that, behold, twins were in her womb. And it came to pass when she travailed that the one put out his hand, and the midwife took and bound upon his hand a scarlet thread, saying, this came out first. And it came to pass, as he drew back his hand, that, behold, his brother came out. And she said, Have you broken forth? This breach be upon you. Therefore she called his name Phares. And afterward came out his brother that had the scarlet thread upon his hand, and his name was called Zerah.
So when Tamar's delivery time came, he gave birth to twins. And during the delivery, one of the twins puts his hand out, so the midwife takes a scarlet thread, ties on his wrist, and to let her know this is the firstborn. But he withdrew his hand, his brother came forth. And the midwife said, how have you broken forth? You broke over your brother. So his name was Perez, which means breach. And then afterwards, his brother, who had the scarlet thread on his wrist, came forth. And they named him Zerah, which means sprout or dawning. Now, Perez is the name that you'll see as you go through the genealogies, okay, as far as the lineage of Jesus. Now, this is always amazed me. When you look at the genealogy of Jesus, people talk about dysfunctional families and they blamed their situation on this, and they blamed their situation on that. No one came from a more dysfunctional family than Jesus. This is incest. And you'll find that there's a harlot in his lineage. You'll find that there's adultery in his lineage. You'll find that there's murder in his lineage. and you think you have problems, it didn't stop Jesus from fulfilling his ministry. And so whatever your past is, it shouldn't stop you from fulfilling your ministry. Get over it. You understand? Let those things propel you forward. Don't lie down and wallow in it. Just help somebody else out of it. Okay?
Don't you think it's interesting how we've seen this before with the twins, where the older, the one sticks out his hand, and I don't know. To me, it's interesting. It points to something else. Chapter 39 tells of Joseph being sold to Potiphar, his promotion in Potiphar's house, the false accusation against Joseph by Potiphar's wife, the imprisonment of Joseph, and the favor Joseph had with the warden. So in verse 1, and Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, brought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which brought him down thither.
And so we know that Joseph sold into slavery by these Ishmaelites, and Potiphar, the Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, actually the head over the guardsmen, bought Joseph. So Joseph is now a slave. Okay.
And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put into his hand.
So the Lord's with Joseph. Joseph is excelling while he serves as a slave in the house of his Egyptian master. And his master recognizes that the Lord's with Joseph, and so he just puts him over everything that he has, because he saw that he was prospering, and they just made him the overseer of his house and entrusted everything to Joseph. Mm-hmm. That's pretty remarkable for a slave, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field.
So from the time Joseph is made overseer of this Egyptian's house, the Lord's blessing this Egyptian because of Joseph. And the blessing is upon the Egyptian, not only in the house, but also in the field. His crops are doing good too, you understand?
And we've seen this before too. You remember with Laban and Jacob? Laban recognized that he was blessed because the Lord had blessed Jacob. There's so many different principles in this. When you are around a person, a man or woman of God that's blessed, that blessing just trickles over, doesn't it? There's a lot we can see in this, isn't it? But even in the unfavorable situation, this man has been sold into slavery. But God's hand was upon him, and he was still blessing him. You know, so many times in our lives when we think, man, this is terrible, blah, 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 the Lord is blessing you in the process. We have the assurance now, don't we, that all things are working for our good. Why? Because we love the Lord, right? And we're called according to his purpose. Well, Joseph was called according to his purpose, wasn't he? Joseph had a purpose to serve. The Lord had given him a purpose. He had those dreams, didn't he? I'm sure he didn't understand how all that would be fulfilled. I mean, who would? The Lord will give us purpose, and we don't have any idea, do we, how it's going to come to pass. But it's up to us to trust. But what I want you to see in this, and we could just read over this, but even in the midst of difficult circumstances, he is being blessed. And a lot of times we think about the blessing of the Lord, many people equate it with like monetary gain. money and things like that. I don't believe that's it. The blessing of the Lord comes in many different forms, doesn't it? In many different ways.
Have you ever heard people say, make the best of a bad situation? Well, that's exactly what Joseph is doing. He's making the best of a bad situation. He's keeping his attitude right. He's not wallowing in self-pity and blaming everybody for where he is and being in slavery. He just excels in where he is. And I've learned this a long time ago, that your thinking controls your life. And you are what you are because of how you think you are. If you think you're blessed, you'll find yourself blessed. If you think, poor old me, and everybody hates me, nobody loves me, then that's how you'll live your life. With your chin on your chest, you understand? And so we have to make the best of bad situations. Do the best you can with what you have.
You know, even getting back to me, there was such a tremendous principle embedded in Jacob with Laban's flocks. And we've talked about this. But right along with your thinking goes that vision that you put before your eyes, right? What you put before your eyes will affect your production. And so if you are mindful of the blessing of the Lord and you are keep that blessing before your eyes, what do you think you're going to produce?
If you see yourself as a victim, you'll always be a victim.
And if you see
and
it,
people
you talk
live
it.
Their lives there.
Yeah.
And all they have to do is change their thinking. So I was victimized one time. But if you keep thinking about it, then you live your life victimized every day. No, go on and make the best of the bad situation. Don't let that stop you from excelling. Let it propel you.
We don't have any scriptural evidence at all that Joseph focused on his victimization. Was he not victimized? Absolutely. But we don't see that being his focus, do we? I bet every single person in this room has been victimized in one way or another. And some of us, many times over.
I had to change my way of thinking because I've had a lot of things set over me when I was younger, even in the military. I was told, you'll never be a leader. Okay? And so I think I'll never be a leader. I'll never be a leader. That thing, it's there constantly. Now you can dwell on that and just let that control your life for the rest of your life. Or you can say, well, he said I would never be a leader. I will prove him wrong. Nobody is going to control my life. You understand? You have to get that attitude. I'm not going to let somebody else's words hold me back from doing what I know that I can do. You understand? And the interesting thing about it is you don't seek to be a leader. You seek to excel in what you do. And if you excel in what you do, your boss man sees it and makes you a leader. That's the way it works. But you have to get that other stuff out of your thinking. You never amount to anything. You'll never have anything. I've been told that. You have to get that thinking out of your head. And then, now here's how I am. You can't do that. You hide and watch. Don't tell me I can't. You with me? Use it to propel you, not to put an anchor on you. Okay? How do you see yourself? That's how you're going to end up.
interesting. It's good. Verse 6. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored.
Now, I want you to think about that. This guy's taken a slave, put him over his high. He doesn't even know what he has, except for the food he's eating. Now, that's trust.
Mm-hmm.
That's confidence in somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know that trust is earned?
Mm-hmm.
You can't demand it. It's earned.
Mm-hmm.
So evidently, Joseph had an excellent countenance about him and a man of integrity. We know he was a man of integrity.
Mm-hmm.
We see that as it unfolds.
And apparently he was handsome.
That's right. He was handsome.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it says it.
It says it right there, yeah.
Good looking man.
Verse 7, we're going to read through 9. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, Lie with me. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, Behold, my master wants not what is with me in this house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is none greater in this house than I, neither has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?
Potiphar's wife thinks he's good looking, so she starts making advances toward him, attempting to entice him to have sexual relations with her, and he refused. And he said, look, you know, my master doesn't even know what he has in the house. He's committed everything he has into my hand. No one greater in the house than me, and he's not withheld anything from me but you. You're his wife. And how can I do something this evil and sin against God?
Mm-hmm.
Note that he said sin against God.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his mind in the right place, okay?
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to read through verse 15. And it came to pass as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, Lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand, and fled, and got him out. And it came to pass, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand, and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house, and spoke unto them, saying, See, he has brought in a Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass, when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out.
Isn't it interesting when the guilty accuses the innocent of being guilty?
Mm-hmm.
It says each day
she's
trying to entice Joseph to have sexual relations with her, but he refuses. And one day he goes in the house to do his job, and there's nobody in the house, no other men inside, and so she caught Joseph's garment. And he ran out of his garment. You understand? Outer coat. And when she realized what had happened, now she's going to make a big deal out of this and lying on Joseph. I'll get you one way or the other. So she calls the men of the house and says, this Hebrew slave, is the essence of it, come in here to mock me. And he attempted to have sexual relations with me, but I cried with a loud voice. And when I did, he ran out of the house and left his garment with me. It's a fabricated lie.
Mm-hmm. And she laid upon his garment And she laid upon his garment by her until his Lord came home. And she spoke unto him according to these words, saying, The Hebrew servant which you have brought unto us came unto me to mock me. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out.
So Potiphar hears his wife's accusation against Joseph, and he was furious. So he takes Joseph, puts him into prison where the king's prisoners were confined, and Joseph remained there in prison. And you'll find he was in prison, we're talking years.
Mm-hmm.
We're not talking days, weeks, and months. Mm-hmm. He's there a long time, okay?
And in verse 21, But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper.
And you can say, well, if the Lord's with me, why am I in the situation I'm in? I want you to think about this. The Lord was with Joseph at home as a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
You with me? He was favored. When he sold into slavery in Potiphar's house, he's favored. The Lord's with him. Things are prospering. When he goes into the prison, the Lord's favored him. Things are prospering. You understand? It's obvious that the Lord's with him because what he's setting his hands to do prospers. And you need to see it from that perspective and don't think, why me or poor old me and all this type thing. But here again, I go back, making the best of a bad situation. That's what Joseph did. He's in prison because someone lied about him and someone didn't investigate and believe the lie, but rather than to get all upset, he keeps his countenance right, keeps his heart right, okay? And the warden sees this, and the warden recognizes something different about this man. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
The Lord's with him. So he says, all right, I'm going to put you over all the prisoners.
And in chapter 40, this chapter discloses the dreams of the butler and the baker and Joseph's interpretation of the dreams, Pharaoh's dreams and Joseph's interpretation of the dreams, Joseph's promotion, his wife and children, his distribution of the grain, his brothers coming to Egypt to buy food, the second trip of Joseph's brothers to Egypt, and his dealings with his brothers. That's a big chapter. We're going to read the first four verses. And it came to pass after these things that the butler of the king of Egypt and his baker had offered their lord the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was wroth against two of his officers, against the chief of the butlers and against the chief of the bakers. And he put them in the ward in the house of the captain of the guard, into the prison, the place where Joseph was bound. And the captain of the guard charged Joseph with them, and he served them, and they continued a season in the ward.
Now, think about this. It says Joseph had been in prison for some time. Now, we don't know how long that was, but just by the way it's stated, sounds like it's more than a few days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then this cupbearer, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, who had violated the king in some way, and he had became angry and had him put in prison and where Joseph was. And so it says they were there for a period of time. We don't know how long that period was, but probably more than a day or two, you understand?
Mm-hmm.
And the warden assigned Joseph to take care of the butler and the baker.
And they dreamed a dream, both of them, each man his dream in one night, each man according to the interpretation of his dream, the butler and the baker of the king of Egypt, which were bound in the prison.
So in the same night, both of these men have a dream. And actually, if you we'll look at the dream a little later, but you'll see that the dream is peculiar to the service that they were given to the king. The butler's dream related to the service he was given. The baker dream related to the service he was given. That's what that means there, okay?
Okay. And Joseph came in unto them in the morning and looked upon them, and behold, they were sad. And he asked Pharaoh's officers that were with him in the ward of his Lord's house, saying, wherefore look you so sadly today?
So remember, they're assigned to Joseph. Joseph is looking out after them. And he goes in that next morning, and he sees something's different here. So he says, what's wrong with you guys? My paraphrase, you understand? But that's the essence of what he said. What's wrong? Something's happened. Tell me about it.
Don't you think it's interesting, too, like, why are you sad? Here again, this goes right back to what Pete was saying earlier about making the best of a good situation. Apparently,
situation.
A bad situation. Apparently, thank you for correcting me, that was the expectation of Joseph. Because here they are in prison, and these two men are sad. Why are you sad? Why are you sad in prison today? You think about that. It's kind of interesting, isn't it? And in verse 8, and they said to him, we have dreamed a dream, and there is no interpreter of it. And Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me them, I pray you.
So when Joseph asked him what's wrong, they said, we've dreamed. The essence of we've dreamed and this troubled us. And Joseph says, well, tell me your dream. You understand? They don't know the interpretation of the dream, so it bothers them. This dream had an impact on them. And so they're wanting to know what the dream means. And so evidently Joseph has gained enough confidence in them that they feel comfortable telling him the dream. And he said, you know, interpretations belong to the Lord.
In verse 9, and the chief butler told his dream to Joseph and said to him, in my dream, behold, a vine was before me. And in the vine there were three branches, and it was as though it budded. And her blossoms shot forth, and the clusters thereof brought forth ripe grapes. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup, and I gave the cup into Pharaoh's hand.
So what was the butler? He was the one that was the cupbearer to the king. What's his dream? It has to do with the vine. It has to do with the wine that he's taken to the king. You know, I dreamed this dream. You know, and here again, it's peculiar to each one's occupation. And he says, you know, there are three branches coming out of this vine, and the same. Actually budded, it blossomed and produced a cluster of ripe grapes. And I was holding Pharaoh's cup, and I took the grapes and I squeezed the juice from the grapes into the cup, and then I gave it to Pharaoh. That's his dream. Now, what does that mean? Okay.
And Joseph said unto him, this is the interpretation of it. The three branches are 3 days. Yet within 3 days shall Pharaoh lift up thine head and restore you unto the palace. And you shall deliver Pharaoh's cup into his hand after the former manner when you were
his butler. This is very deep, very specific, okay? Mm-hmm. You'll know if he missed it on this, all right?
Yeah.
So Joseph said, all right, here's the interpretation. The three branches represent 3 days. Within 3 days, Pharaoh's going to release you from prison. Not only is he going to release you from prison, but he's going to restore you back into the position you were originally in as his cupbearer. So in 3 days, we'll know if that's true. Okay? Mm-hmm. And we have 3 minutes. You want to go ahead and get that biker right quick?
Maybe. But think on me when it shall be well with you, and show kindness, I pray you, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house. Got to get that.
We're not going to get to the baker. But the Joseph says to the butler, when this happens, remember me.
Yeah.
Put in a good word for me to Pharaoh. I'm innocent. I'm in here. I haven't done anything wrong. I shouldn't be in prison. So how about putting the word in for me?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so we're going to have to stop there because our time's up.
Okay.
We'll pick back up with it next session.
Okay.
Father, I thank you that you bless us indeed to enlarge our territory. Your hands with us to keep us from evil so that we do not cause pain. You bless us and keep us. You make your face to shine upon us. You're gracious unto us and you lift up your counsel upon us and give us peace. The Lord, we invite you to rise up, let your enemies be scattered, and those who hate you flee before you. Amen. You guys have a great weekend.